Hello, Greenhorns. Happy Thursday. It is Greenhorns Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. I am happy to be coming to you live from the 101 North near Healdsburg, California. The green is emerging from below the brown dryness of the California, Northern California region, and I am happy to be joined on this episode by Sandor Katz, who's coming to us from Tennessee. Hey, Sandor, are you on the line?
I sure am. Hey, Severin.
Oh, it's so nice to hear your voice.
It's so great to hear your voice, too.
Well, now, what's the weather?
And you're
like
in Healdsburg.
Now?
I love Healdsburg.
Yeah,
the most impressive kefir grains I've ever seen were in Healdsburg.
Oh, and there's so much fermentation going on. It was a late and somewhat stressful harvest for all the winemakers up here because it was a slow summer with a kind of a weird end tail. But tell me, how's the weather down there?
Well, it's actually today. It is drizzly, and we desperately needed the rain. So everybody here is thrilled. But it's definitely autumn. The leaves are mostly off of the trees. We've had some really cold nights. All the summer crops are over. Beautiful fall gardens in this climate. But we're just all really relieved to have some rain.
So now, most of our listeners will hopefully be familiar with Sandor, who is, really one of the Elvis Presleys of the fermentation movement. But will you mind giving a little backstory on what you've been up to and why you've been doing it?
Well, sure. So anyway, I have a book which is called Wild Fermentation, and I have a website of this with the same name, which is wildfermentation.com. And I have really been on a mission of fermentation education, trying to help demystify fermentation and encourage people to, reclaim this, this very important art that, essentially is an aspect of agriculture. The last few days I did something very exciting, which is on Saturday I did a workshop at one of Tennessee's most established organic farms. It's a biodynamic farm called Long Hungry Creek Farm with a farmer named Jeff Poppin, who calls himself the Barefoot Farmer. He grows radishes, daikon radishes, as a cover crop. In exchange for doing a workshop, I was able to fill up a pickup truck with radishes. With help from some friends, we sliced and chopped and grated all those radishes and some cabbages and some peppers and some garlic, and turned that into 70 gallons of radish kraut cheese. So that's all very exciting. And that's really how I got interested in fermentation in the first place, was when I first moved down here to Tennessee and got involved in having a garden. I was faced with the, classic, problem of abundance that people who farm and garden everywhere are faced with, that, crops tend to be ready at a specific moment of the year, and whether that's radishes or cabbages or whatever, that's when you have to get creative. Historically, fermentation has been a very important aspect of how people preserve the abundance that appears at certain moments of the year to sustain them through the rest of the year. So I get very excited every year at this time of year when I can put up large amounts of sauerkraut. I make sauerkraut all year around, but in the summertime, it's more of a short-term process that's about creating something that is delicious to eat and very nutritious, but it's, not particularly a food that preserves for a long time in the summertime. But when you make it as the temperatures are cooling, it's really an important strategy that's enabled people in temperate regions to have the vitamins that are found only in fresh vegetables all year round.
So obviously the vitamins and the fresh crackle of squeaky cabbage between your teeth is a year-long joy. But it's also of one of those things that people who are not themselves farming can do in order to connect with and support those who are farming, because frankly, a lot of times farmers are so busy at that time of year or exhausted from having just done this whole friggin' long season that it's not a moment where you just are compelled to all by yourself and alone in the kitchen toil over any project. So this importance of community is obviously something that you thought a lot about. Maybe you could share some of the businesses and community experiences that you know about.
Yeah, sure. Well, I mean, I would say that, you know, I mean, every aspect of, you know, producing food is better to do with other people. And it's all community building. I mean, you know, this, this idealized notion that we have, of self-sufficiency, of, you know, sort of, you know, the family that grows all of their own food and you know, takes care of themselves. That's really a myth. Nobody can grow all of the food that they eat. Or let me say it differently, you probably wouldn't want to. You'd have a pretty limited diet. So that's why it's great to have, a network of neighbors and friends and food producers who can, exchange the different things that they grow. Not everybody has to grow everything. People can specialize, and specialization doesn't have to be monocultures that are hundreds of acres of a single thing. It's basically creating a division of labor that makes life manageable. And so the context in which I've developed my interest and my skill at fermenting food is living in a community in Tennessee where not only was I gardening collaboratively with people and preparing food on a daily basis collaboratively with people. We're sharing resources in all sorts of different ways, and that's within an intentional community of people living together on a piece of land and basically sharing a kitchen together. But then it also exists, for me on a much larger scale where, I live in a rural area and, through the years I've gotten to be friends with lots of my neighbors. And so, I get a phone call from someone saying like, oh my God, we have so many pears this year. We can't use them all. Would you come over and harvest some pears? The blackberries are really pumping out. There's more than we can harvest. So, there's a whole network of neighbors and friends who support each other's food production efforts, and beyond the actual growing of the food, one of the reasons they call me is because they know that I like to make wine and mead and different kinds of fermented delicacies, and I always have ideas for what to do with any food that there's a lot of. But I think that fermentation is definitely a way that for people who aren't growing their own food, it's a way to become intimately connected with some of the life forces that go into creating food. Fermentation, for those who don't know much about it, is the transformative action of microorganisms that we harness to create foods and beverages that people like to eat. And, preservation is certainly one of the important reasons why people ferment food, but people also ferment food to make foods more digestible and to enhance the flavors of foods. And, I would encourage listeners to take a walk through any gourmet food store and start thinking about the nature of foods that we consider to be gourmet foods. And almost all of them are the products of fermentation. They're created by the transformative action of microorganisms. And part of how I got interested in fermentation education was realizing that there's a huge there's a huge fear in our culture of aging food outside of refrigeration. And, you know, I love my refrigerator, my fermentation slowing device. It makes my life a lot easier. I'm not advocating that everybody has to throw away their refrigerators. You know, I think that, you know, recognizing that these, you know, that these foods, you know, are important and that they are not rocket science. You don't need to have a degree in microbiology. You don't need to have a laboratory. You don't need to have a microscope. You don't need to be able to absolutely control, you know, the temperature and conditions in your kitchen. You know, these are all ancient rituals that our ancestors have been doing forever. And, you know, just like growing food, just like saving seeds, it's really important that we hold on to, you know, the legacy of this knowledge that our clever ancestors figured out.
Now, our clever ancestors figured out a lot of things, and we, as their clever progeny, are many of us really deeply moved by our involvement in the barter economy and how much abundance that brings to our lives and how much joyful sharing there is, particularly within the young farming community. It's almost second nature. But I think it's important to hear from you, Sandor, who travel around all over the country giving workshops and sharing stories and knowledge about the fermentation that's bubbling up everywhere, to also share some of the business opportunities that are there that help young farmer businesses, particularly, add value to the agricultural commodities that they're growing, and make opportunities for non-farmers to latch into that farm-based economy and you know, just grow more business from that food.
Yeah, well, I think that you used the key phrase, which is that, you know, fermentation adds value to the products of agriculture. So, you know, anybody who can, you know, take their grapes and turn them into wine have made them much more valuable. And anybody who can take some milk and turn it into cheese is transforming a raw product of agriculture into something far more valuable. And that is no less true for cabbages or any other food. So yeah, I mean it's great to encourage people to eat you know, fruits and vegetables that they buy in their raw state, but a lot of the things that people eat you know, are foods that have been processed in some way, and you know, really most of the traditional styles of food processing involve fermentation, you know, and so, you know, in the realm of, you know, making cheese, making alcoholic beverages, making sauerkraut, kimchi, and pickles, you know, these are, you know, all opportunities for us to reclaim our food and rebuild our you know, regional and local economies. So yeah, you don't have to be the farmer. There are opportunities for you know, for people who are connected to farmers to start small businesses making some of these fermented foods. I mean, there's no reason for you know, people who are living in Virginia to be buying sauerkraut that's you know, shipped to Virginia from California. And you know, in many places, the only you know, to the extent that these foods are available, they're available shipped from far away. And so, you know, this is the next step of relocalizing agriculture. It's not just, you know, creating more farms, which is absolutely essential. It's not only creating, you know, more farmers markets and other kinds of creative venues for direct marketing, you know, of the things that farms grow, but it's also, you know, creating, you know, smaller scale enterprises to do these transformational value-added products, whether they are making wines or making sauerkraut or making cheese. It doesn't only have to be the farmers who do this adding of value. It can be the farmers. It can be part of the farm enterprise, the farm organism. But there are also lots of opportunities, for people to find their niche. I think that, sustainable food is not a spectator sport. It really demands the involvement of more people. And it's not that everybody has to quit their job and become a farmer. But, there are ways that all of us can find food production niches. And I'm not necessarily talking about commercial food production. I'm talking about the barter economy that you just mentioned. Experimenting a little bit with fermentation, finding something that you like to make and making a big batch of it once or twice a year, that positions you to be part of the barter economy and to provide, a food or beverage that people really enjoy, and have something to exchange with, people who are finding other niches for themselves.
Well, and it's funny, in that whole debate about, well, should I quit my job and become a farmer, or should I turn the page and really commit my career to agriculture. This is a place in life. I meet a lot of people who are right there making those decisions, and often what they find is that there's a kind of a halfway point where you're where you have a certain amount of off-farm income in the beginning phases of starting an agricultural enterprise. I think having Sandor, having you reflect a little about, what does it mean when more of us are employed, either partially or completely, in the production of food from local places, and as opposed to working for, various other people / the man. What's the implication of that for our economy and our society?
Well, I would say that the revival of local and regional agriculture, is perhaps the only form of true economic stimulus. I mean, agriculture is the foundation of economic security. What's interesting in the crash of the markets that preceded this whole recession is that our productive capacity, our ability as as a nation, as communities, as a world to feed ourselves has not changed at all. It was just a crashing of the markets of all these abstracted commodities, but it did absolutely nothing to shift the productive capacity one way or the other. It's in that productive capacity that true economic security and economic stimulus exists. So, I certainly understand that in the case of of any individual, it's hard to leave some of the perks and seeming security of having a regular salary and some kind of a regular job, but I would say in the bigger scheme of things, and especially trying to re-envision a different kind of economy, it's absolutely essential that that more people get directly involved in expanding our productive capacity and expanding the food choices that exist with any local or regional area. And I keep every time I say local, I try to remember to say regional, because I don't think that all food has to come within 10 miles or even 50 miles. I mean, I think we're a world full of little microclimates, and figuring out how to engage with people who live in other microclimates, you know, within a day's drive really makes sense. We don't need to sort of make the jump from a globalized infrastructure to meeting all of our needs within 50 miles. There's lots of intermediate steps in that.
Well, and I think those intermediate steps are the logistics and the processes and the relationships and the that's our life that we have to spend doing that work, and I think it's going to be very interesting. So I'd say, if you like wine, it's nice to know that getting involved more closely in the production of wine or pickles or sauerkraut or cheese, that all of that is, in fact, a part of the great reclaiming of democracy also, and of true accountability to place. So obviously this is all very big talk, but it's nice where it's all kind of contained within something that's also very delicious.
And, I want to just really encourage everybody, like, you know, whether, you know, you don't have to be thinking about it as a way of earning your living. It's a really, like, you know, magical, wonderful realm in which to just experiment, just for fun, or just because you have some extra vegetables and you need to think of something to do with them. It just opens up this whole powerful, invisible world. And, the fact is that there's an inevitability to fermentation. The transformative action of microorganisms will always, do their work on our food. It's just a question of, are they going to, you know, turn it into something that we're going to call spoiled and throw into the compost? Or is it going to turn it into something, that we perceive as especially delicious? And so, you know, really what the fermentation arts amount to are simple manipulations of environmental conditions to encourage the growth of, the kinds of organisms that are going to make our food even more delicious and enhance it, rather than those kinds of organisms that are going to, turn it into something that we want to discard into the compost. But everybody can do it, and I really encourage everybody to give it a try.
So everybody can do it. Everybody should do it. Everybody who does it will find themselves inextricably drawn further and further into the real-world economy of food and farming. And if they want to get started on this path, and/or how do they do it? Where are your workshops?
Well, first of all, I'd say check out my website, and that's where I post my workshops. I teach a lot of workshops at a kitchen that I've set up near where I live here in Middle Tennessee. I do a fair amount of traveling and teach workshops in other places. On my website, you can find plenty of information to get started without having to take any kind of a workshop. I would definitely recommend my book, Wild Fermentation. My website is wildfermentation.com, and I am deep into another book about fermented foods. So hopefully a year from now, I will have another more thorough, more in-depth book about fermentation that I can recommend. But so far, that's just in manuscript form, and it doesn't even really have a title that I'm ready to say out loud.
Well, I just can't wait for it to read more. Sandor, he also wrote a book called The Revolution Will Not Be Microwaved, very much worthy of checking out. That's also available at Chelsea Green, which is a really amazing, as you I'm sure all know, really amazing publisher out of Vermont that makes a lot of titles that are relevant to young farmers and to their to the larger community. Sandor, thank you so much for being on the radio today and for doing what you do. It's always so wonderful to hear from you and to know that you keep bubbling up with truckloads of turnips.
Well, thank you so much, Severin, and thanks to you for all that you do.
Thank you for being here with us again on Heritage Radio Network for yet another episode of Greenhorns Radio, radio for young farmers, by young farmers, from the hills and plains of America. Bye-bye.